We are Rogue Media Sports.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Matt Mosley. It is the Doomsday Podcast. And we have Ed Werder coming to us live from Los Angeles, just hours after the Cowboys just, at the gun, Cowboys win it. And this strange, strange game. But Ed, over the broadcast, and boy, you've been out there since, you've been up since about 4 this morning. And I think you were out at the stadium at 6:30 or something. Just sounds awful.
Live at 6:40 local time. I was in my suit by 5:30.
Suit by 5:30. Out there live at 6:40 and doing some great stand-ups, I might add.
Such a glamorous life.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And most people would kill for it, so trying to keep that in mind. Ed was, I'm not seeing him now, Chris. Gosh, I like seeing my guy there. All right, Ed. What was the over the television? It sounded like the very, very pro Cowboys crowd. Was this did it almost remind you of some of those old Arizona crowds the Cowboys used to bring when they would play the Cardinals back in the day? I mean, it seemed like a very, very heavy Cowboys crowd.
It was at least 60-40, and I don't think we were surprised by that because obviously, of the two teams that are playing out of this stadium, the Rams and the Chargers having relocated from San Diego have never really created a fan base here. And the Cowboys are sort of a global team and have the advantage of having training camp in Southern California for the past several years. And so they probably have as much or more of a fan base locally as the Chargers do. That was not Brandon Staley's expectation because I asked him about that. When I spoke to him earlier in the week, the first year Chargers coach told me he expected to see a lot of powder blue. And, you know, he was excited for these fans to see what these guys have been working on as a team. And then Zach Martin said after the game today that the situation was so favorable to the Cowboys on the road that they actually never had to go to a silent snap count. And they think the Chargers did have to use a silent snap count to overcome the crowd noise as Justin Herbert was communicating calls at the line of scrimmage. So that doesn't happen very often. And you know, Mike McCarthy said in his press conference after the game that he felt like they were back at training camp. They're infinitely comfortable in this environment. And he too said it was very much like having a home game in many ways.
Yeah, he didn't look infinitely comfortable on managing the clock with about 30 seconds left, but we'll...
Or at the end of the first half.
That's very strange. All right, we are at Frito Nation Productions. Ed is in Los Angeles. Chris Gross, executive producer and partner in Frito Nation Productions. Please play the music. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast, and so pleased to be with you this evening. And Ed is just, we're taping this just a couple of hours after the game. I saw Ed had Micah Parsons outside the locker room, had an exclusive visit with him. Let's start right there, Ed. That was an interesting storyline heading into this game with so many defensive players out due to various things and obviously the injury with DeMarcus Lawrence, and he's going to be out for a long while. And then Randy Gregory trying to come back from COVID protocols. This defensive line was so down that they basically had to teach Micah Parsons a new position and get him rolling over at defensive end. All he did, Ed, was end up with, according to whatever source I saw, maybe it was ESPN stats, you probably had this, like the most pressures for a rookie since Bosa. like eight pressures. I mean, this was really quite a performance. What did you glean from talking to Micah Parsons after the game, and how big do you think it was for him in his development?
Well, I think it says an awful lot about his mental acuity and his position flexibility that he displaces Jalen Smith and starts at Mike linebacker week one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then in week two on Wednesday, he's training for that same role, practicing for that same role against the Chargers. Then DeMarcus Lawrence breaks his foot and is out for 6 weeks. And Dan Quinn comes to Micah Parsons on Thursday and says, "Hey, we need you to be a defensive end this week." And so he told me that it took him 2 days to feel comfortable with his alignment and to understand his run responsibilities, because while he's played there before, it was always as an edge rusher in a, you know, situational substitution where he was just rushing the passer and he had run responsibilities in this game. But he obviously was able to take advantage of the fact that the Chargers, like the Cowboys, were without their starting right tackle. Brian Bulaga was out of the game with a back injury. So he was up against Storm Norton, a backup player, and he took advantage of it. But for a rookie in his second game to be the solution to the Cowboys' defensive problem of, hey, we don't have Randy Gregory or DeMarcus Lawrence for this game. They have the two highest career sack totals of anybody on our roster. And the next closest guy is Jalen Smith. We need you to play a new position in your second NFL game. I mean, that's pretty remarkable for them to feel comfortable going to him and believing he could pull it off and him actually delivering the desired result during the course of the game.
Yeah. And Ed, it was interesting that because of that, it made Jalen Smith and Vander Esch have to play more snaps at linebacker. And, you know, that getting Jalen Smith on the field has not always been a great thing, but he played better. And then Vander Esch made some big plays. I mean, one possession, in fact, he drew a penalty, had a sack, like a 7-yard loss. And it's just a tremendous, you know, making plays out in the flat, showing some of the speed, some of the things that made them think he was going to be a star linebacker for them for many years. So the domino effect of it was it got some of these guys back on the field and they responded.
Well, you know, I talked to Dan Quinn after the game, the defensive coordinator, and asked him, have you ever had a rookie do what Micah Parsons just did? And how difficult is it? And he said it's very difficult. And he never can remember a rookie in his coaching career being asked to do that and doing so as successfully as we saw Micah Parsons do today. And we knew that really the strength of this defense was at linebacker, because they've invested heavily with Jalen Smith financially. They invested a first-round draft pick in Leighton Vander Esch, who's always been a good player when he's been healthy. And then they brought in Keanu Neal, and he and Parsons were the starting linebackers last week. So they went to that position because they had depth at that position, and they used that depth to their benefit to address a situation that really was really a crisis situation for them on defense coming into this game. I mean, everything that happened to them, you know, you lose Randy Gregory to a positive COVID test, you lose Lael Collins to a drug suspension, you lose DeMarcus Lawrence to a broken foot for 6 weeks in a practice. I mean, that kind of thing just doesn't happen. And for it to happen, you know, one day after another in between two games, and then you're having to go back out on the road and trying to avoid being 0-2, in that regard, I think the coaching staff did a pretty remarkable job. I think we'll talk later about how poorly, in many situations, Mike McCarthy managed the game. But they really handled the roster well. And I think you have to feel pretty good seeing this defense just in 2 weeks, six turnovers in 2 weeks. And, you know, we see Trayvon Diggs has been cross-trained to play both corner spots. So he can match up like he did today against Keenan Allen, like he did last week against Mike Evans. And, you know, he can play those guys well. So a lot of credit to Dan Quinn for the way he's been able to improve the defense, get the right personnel. And, you know, today is a perfect example of this is the first time I think they'd lost 17 consecutive games when they didn't score at least 30 points. So this was the kind of game that they never win. They lost 17 consecutive times when they failed to score 30 points. That's the longest such streak in franchise history. And today it comes to a remarkable conclusion when they seemingly were so shorthanded on defense.
They were, and Kazi makes that play in the end zone. And then, Ed, you know, from my standpoint, to watch a cornerback, you know, they let Byron Jones walk, and he ends up getting a huge deal with the Dolphins, but he didn't get interceptions. You can argue over why. Maybe they just were scared to throw at him. I don't know if that was always the case, but to have a guy like Diggs, and he still gives up plays, and he did on a long ball that Herbert threw today. But that is a play that we saw today where that was not just like a wild, horrible throw. That was a guy making a play like on a bang-bang. He's trailing the receiver, and he reaches out, and that's just not a play we're used to seeing from the Cowboys secondary. So that has to I think fans have to feel really good about where Diggs is headed. And then, Ed, to your point about the defense stepping up, Hooker, Curse, I mean, they're out without Donovan Wilson, who's a starting safety today. Those guys played really well. I mean, Curse especially just really seemed to have great instincts out there and was all over the field.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Herbert, you know, is kind of the reincarnation of Dan Marino. He's had that kind of pronounced effect, statistically at least, on the game as a young quarterback in just his second year. And today was the third straight game he's had a 300-yard passing game, and the first time in his career that he's achieved that. However, he also had his third career game with multiple interceptions, and the Chargers are 2-8 when he throws an interception and 5-2 when he doesn't turn the ball over. And so those turnovers were pivotal. And if you look at Diggs, I mean, no, he's a second-round pick last year who started from week one as a rookie, led the team in interceptions last year. And in the first two games against Justin Herbert and Tom Brady, he gets a pick against each of those guys. And, you know, all the talk all offseason, you know, from Dan Quinn and from Mike McCarthy was they want playmakers, they want ball hawks. And it seems to be there's, you know, maybe an indication here that that's kind of what they've begun to put together. They're at the very beginning of all this. And the other thing was, you know, Mike McCarthy has talked about playing complementary football. And finally, I think they did it. That was complementary football. I felt like going into this game that we were going to see the identity of what the Cowboys wanted to be if they could control the game against the Chargers. You know, I mean, Dak came into this game having thrown 57 passes in each of his last three games that he started and finished. Two of those last year, I think, were the result of them playing from behind, and it was forced on them to play that way. And then week one this year, obviously it was, you know, game opponent oriented in that's the way they felt they had to go at the Tampa Bay Bucs defense. So today I think we saw the kind of team that we could expect them to be more often than not.
Yeah, it was interesting that they put up 14 points and moved the ball like crazy early in the first quarter. The amount of first downs they had was like staggering. I mean, it was just 14. Like
14 in the first quarter, the most in NFL history, matches the highest total in NFL history for a first quarter.
So they're just blazing. And then obviously things kind of slowed down after that. I think the you know, they won a game that they usually lose. And I think Romo threw out the stat that they had been over the last couple of seasons in one score games. They were, going back 2019, 3-10, I believe was what I heard him say, and they've really struggled in that. They did get the benefit of a rough call on and I love Herbert. I started watching him last year pretty closely late in the season, and he's a great young quarterback. But he's flinging that thing out of bounds. If you want to argue, I mean, like the announcers, Ed, and I'm sure even y'all were wondering, okay, was he out of the pocket, like to where that's a legal throwaway? Is that, and they call a sack, and they showed that replay, huh? Yeah.
That was the Micah Parsons sack. Correct. Very dubious call, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, he was not in any immediate jeopardy of being injured. He wasn't really contained. And they said his forward progress had been stopped or some bizarre thing. And an athletic quarterback like that should, you know, get the benefit of the doubt from the officiating crew. And in that case, I don't think he did. And, you know, I mean, you talked about the Cowboys, you know, losing close games. Well, nobody's lost more close games in unusual, impossible ways over in recent years than the Chargers. You know, that's why they fired, you know, their coach and hired Brandon Staley. The thing that Brandon Staley talked to me about during the week was how much he's emphasized situational football just because of that. Like in practice every day, he has them playing games the whole time in practices to condition them for doing the right thing in difficult circumstances. And they really didn't do that today. I mean, they lost two touchdown passes nullified by offensive penalties. And they also had, I think, 11 penalties they drew in the course of the game. And like I said, two of them cost them touchdowns.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they had some big plays that were brought back, and the Cowboys were beneficiaries, and that's a game that they lose a lot. Ed, just in the and we'll get over to the offensive side of the ball, but this is a huge win. It seems weird in week two to say, hey, big win, but for all those reasons you stated, that is kind of crazy that they haven't won a game in which they didn't score 30 points since 2018. Going back all that time, I was touting the Doomsday podcast. I jumped on with Colin Cowherd, Ed, tonight, and that's one of the things we were talking about is I kind of feel like Jerry's going, I was watching the family celebrate as that 56-yarder went through and thinking, oh, thank goodness for McCarthy that ball went through the uprights. But this is the biggest win. You know, last year they had those weird kind of iffy where they were kind of keeping their hopes alive and they got a little bit of a run late, but you and I both knew that was fool's gold and that was really not going to get them anywhere. This was I don't think you could call it a must win, but the odds of an 0-2 team kind of turning things around just go down way so much that this feels like a real big one for them. And I think that's part of the reason Jerry was going so crazy after the game. I think he understands that.
Well, I think historically speaking, teams that start 0-2 have an 11% chance of making the playoffs, and a team that goes 1-1 has a 41% chance of making the playoffs. So it was significant for them to do that for that reason alone. And then to look at it from the standpoint of, hey, they went on the road, they beat a good team, and now you get to go home and play three straight home games against the Eagles and the Giants and Carolina. I mean, you're looking at the very real possibility of getting off to a 4-1 start.
Yeah, wow. That is the Carolina team, boy, jumped out to a good start today, and Darnold playing well, but that's an interesting. Well, 4-1, Ed, that at 4-1, there would be a lot of Super Bowl talk. Just prepare yourself for that.
Yeah, this would have been a trial run for their Super Bowl appearance in February coming out to SoFi Stadium because that's where the Super Bowl is being played this year. Of course, we said the same thing last year.
Oh, man. Ed, coming to it.
I think one other thing before we go to break or change subjects is, you know, Greg Zuerlein. You know, last week he missed two field goals. He missed an extra point. The Cowboys sign a kicker. I'm out there on the field pregame. And Jerry Jones and his entourage of future heirs of the Cowboys franchise are standing there, and they are scrutinizing Zuerlein as he's going through his pregame warmup. So for him to then come out and make a 56-yard game-winning field goal, his 10th career game-winning field goal and third as a Cowboy, and the longest game-winning field goal with no time left on the clock in Cowboys franchise history really speaks to his ability to perform in the moment. You know, I mean, and you're right. What would the criticism of Mike McCarthy have been like had they not made the field goal at the end of that game after running, what, 28 seconds off the clock and not getting another play. I mean, they really put Zuerlein in a bad situation. And, you know, McCarthy blamed it on the clock operator, the clock being, you know, going off or whatever. But obviously he didn't handle the situation very well. And the criticism would have been very intense, especially putting it on top of their other special team blunder at the end of the first half.
The clock operator. I like that. Just blame it on the clock. It wasn't our, we had a good plan. The clock operator got to us. That's a strange thing. Now, Ed, I did want to tell you before we go to Glenn Stretch Smith with his grades, we have a sponsor returning, a partner returning to the fold. It is none other, Ed, and this is something that's been important to the Cowboys, and you and I have been around this in the past. It is something I like to call Miller Lite. All right. Ed, it's the perfect drink for just doing you, and it is a great tasting light beer. Ed, you're a guy, you know, you're kind of like an occasional margarita, not a big drinker, not of the old school. You are an old school sports writer, but I would not say you ever fit in the heavy drinking old sports writers.
Well, I think because when I came to Dallas, Matt, we had a Miller Lite guy in Randy Galloway.
Yeah.
And so somebody had to be sober enough to drive him around after these games. And when that wasn't you, that was me. So that's the reason that I have not been known to be a hard drinking sports writer. But like you said, I'll have a margarita. Occasionally I'll have a beer, and you know, I might have a rum and Coke with a lime now and then too.
Well, the Miller Lite, I think, because you were such an excellent tennis player, the Miller Lite is good for you in a lot of ways, with a great taste and only 96 calories, Ed. You don't have to load up, you know, these IPAs and all these kind of locally brewed. I like supporting all these people, but man, that stuff can add pounds, Ed, unwanted pounds, I might say.
And with my metabolism and my age, I just can't afford that.
You certainly can't. Ed, what is your age? Don't answer that. So next time you're getting ready to enjoy cold ones with your friends, go to MillerLite.com. Here, this is a good one. Here, listen to this. Go to MillerLite.com/doomsday to find delivery options near you. Or you can pick up some Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell beer. It's Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. All right, it is time, Ed, to send it over to our loyal correspondent, former Cowboys coach during the Barry Switzer days, former scout as well, Glenn Stretch Smith. And we had a chance to get Glenn's grades, which we like to call stretch marks. And joining us as he's getting ready tonight to tape his TV special on WFAA. Now Joe Trahan running that show over there. So Stretch, let's start. And I don't want to get your blood boiling too much, but how about our rollicking special teams coach, Bones Fossil, with some, you know, he's always in the mix with something. And with the Cowboys having the Chargers in a 4th and 20, Bones Fossil decides to come for the punt block. And by the way, it was described later, Mike McCarthy said that the plan was to drive the punt protector into the punter. That was what was supposed to happen. What happened is they run into the punter, and it gave the Chargers a chance right there before the half. They didn't capitalize, but still another ridiculous moment for the Cowboys special teams. What would you give them as a grade?
I mean, again, they keep doing things that it's almost like not having enough sense to get out of the rain. And about the time that I'm ready to stamp the F, I watched Zuerlein go out there and just hammer that field goal for a win. How can you give him an F when he went out and did exactly what he was supposed to do? I'm kind of glad they didn't get it any closer. You know what? I think that guy he doesn't know how to hit a half wedge. He hits a full shot every time. And I think that's exactly what you saw him do. And because of that, I mean, you got to give the special teams a C. But I can tell you right now, I was damn sure ready to give them an F coming into what was an absolute bonehead play down there.
All right, I'm going to start with the defense. The defense was missing so many players. I'm kind of anxious to get your take on this. Let's start at the area where they were missing out a lot, and that was at defensive end. And Dorrance Armstrong had to be in there. Basham had to be. They obviously move Micah Parsons over there as their starting defensive end. What did you see from that defensive line in this game?
Well, and that's a very difficult situation when you got to be, especially talk about Micah Parsons, when you got to be put in a 4-3 scheme and you're the guy that's got to set the edge. Now, they tried to keep him out of a lot of those situations where he could just be a, you know, get up the field guy, use his speed, pin his ears back, and I thought he did a great job with that. Here's the downside of it, is that they had an issue setting the edge against the run. If you think that you're going to go hang your hat week to week on Micah Parsons being a defensive end, you're going to get the ball run at you, and you're going to get a heavy dose of it. Hopefully they can get Randy Gregory back. Hopefully they can get in a rotation of guys until they can get Lawrence back in there. But I thought when you saw how they played, the fact that they really played hard, they were kind of a bend but don't break group. And yes, would you have liked to seen them say, hey, I think they had 19 rushes for 95 yards. Obviously, they're running the ball at 5 yards a clip. But a lot of times, you got to say, hey, right here is where we're going to play to our strengths. We've got to handle this situation week by week. You got to give Dan Quinn a lot of credit. You got to give that defensive line a lot of credit. And because of that, I got to give them a B.
A B for the defensive line. And I get all that. I will tell you that Micah Parsons, you can use this on TV tonight if you'd like, had the most pressure since I think it was Bosa, going all the way back to either 2017 or 18, had 8 pressures in this game. So Micah Parsons, from that end, that standpoint, had a big game. Okay, linebacker. I noticed Van Der Esch flashing quite a bit. Keanu came in there and did some good things. And even Jalen, even the much maligned linebacker, Jalen Smith, came in there, especially on a couple of run plays, I thought, and had some nice fits. What did you think of the linebackers?
Yeah, and again, I think that the term you use is fits. I mean, I thought they fit okay on the run. I thought they played the pass okay. I mean, obviously, when you get those guys locked in coverage, that's a lot of times what teams want to do. They want to get Van Der Esch, or they want to get Jalen locked on their back or their tight end. But I thought they did a nice job of changing up some of the calls, not getting them exposed. Again, Van Der Esch had the sack. I thought Jalen played okay. And I thought that group played okay. And again, a very workmanlike effort. I got to give the linebackers a B as well, Matt.
Okay, B for the line, B for the linebackers. What about the secondary? Two interceptions for that group.
And a very timely, pair of interceptions. I thought the Diggs interception, one of the best. Just he's seen the route, he sat on the route, he broke on the ball. It was very well done. And then you see him on that big third down allow Herbert to throw that whole shot throw, and the ball gets over the top of him. He made some mistakes, and he continues to make those little mistakes. Anthony Brown at times flashed at you a little bit tonight. I thought the safeties did an adequate job. It concerns me still that I think that the Cowboys' secondary just has got to get better with playing leverage and coverage. I mean, and when I say that, they can't get themselves out of position. They've got to stay with great, with great discipline in where they're supposed to be in their zones. And, again, 2 interceptions really kept them from getting a D, but I gave that group a C.
All right, and I like Jaron Kearse, by the way, made some nice plays in this game, seemed to show have some good instincts, as they talked about on the broadcast. The over on the offensive side, Dak was really efficient, had the one pick that certainly he'd like to have back. What would you make of his outing?
Yeah, you'd like to see when he throws that deep over. I mean, you'd like to see him either his guy gets it or nobody gets it. I mean, that ball's got to be laid out there. It was a really poor throw. Then I come back and I think about the slant that he threw down there to Cooper that got him in field goal range. It was an absolutely phenomenal throw. I mean, Dak is really, really, to me, he's taken some big strides these first 2 weeks. I questioned whether he was a $40 million quarterback, I'll be honest with you. And when I see what he's done, when I see how he's recovered from that injury, when I just see him placing the ball with a lot of exactness on a lot of those swings, on a lot of those wide receiver screens. I mean, he sticks the ball right in their face mask. He's obviously got a comfort level with Jarwin, some of those middle reads. I love the fact that he kind of pumps the team up. I mean, he is a leader in what you want. And, you know, minus the interception that he would have gotten really his second straight A, I got to give him a B. You cannot throw that ball. You can't leave that ball behind on that deep over.
All right, and then let's talk about the O-line. And really Terrence Steele in there filling in at right tackle, but at times it appeared to be a dominant performance, especially the way they opened a lot of holes for the running game.
Really good job by the offensive line. Really good job pass protecting. I like that you pointed out Steele. He looked very comfortable. And last year there were times that he really, you know, he just looked like he didn't even belong in that situation. But I thought he did a hell of a job, obviously, with Zach Martin back in there. You know what kind of player he is. The oddish Connor Williams. We know what Tyron can do. I mean, I thought the offensive line did a hell of a job. And really, they really kept what I felt like was a good game plan alive by continuing to hammer at a L.A. defensive line that wasn't as good as they are. And I like when you don't play down to competition. They played to their competition. You got to give this offensive line an A.
Ooh, an A for the offensive line. And then I was interested in your take on it was the to watch Pollard. I thought they did a good job of continuing to feed him, even though in the past, you know, Zeke has been the sledgehammer type guy. They complemented each other extremely well, but Pollard was his speed posed a lot of problems for the Chargers. What did you give those guys?
And he does a great job with his vision. I mean, he's about a guy that runs with his eyes. He sees it. He's able to bounce it when they run power outside. Zeke, we know in a 17-game season, Zeke is going to continue to be Zeke. I thought these guys ran the football extremely well. And I tell you something, they put CeeDee Lamb in there running back. How about he hits it up in there for 13 yards? I mean, hell, I mean, seeing guys be contagious to their teammates because of how they run. You're running with your pads over your toes. You're getting downhill, even in the plays that Zeke was hit almost behind the line. He'd fall forward for a yard. Those are the things you want to see for your backs. And I'm giving the running backs an A as well.
Okay, an A for the offensive line and the running backs. And then let's grade out the wide receivers and tight ends. Thought, obviously, Jarwin is such a great catch radius, great target for Dak. And then the rest of the wide receivers there. Wilson actually made one really, really nice play.
I tell you, Cedric Wilson's a good football player. I mean, think about it. We went into this game, and I mean, you didn't hear a lot about, well, we're missing Gallup here. We're missing Cedric Wilson is a heck of a football player, knows where to be. He's obviously smart, runs his motions crisp. He can block. The best thing that I saw out of the receivers, I'm telling you, for the night, was on the on the 23-yard Pollard run into the short side, into the boundary. And Amari Cooper passes off the ball and goes and butts up the run support safety. And I mean butted him right in the mouth. And it was a 23-yard run. It would have been about an 8-yard run. But when you see receivers blocking down the field, running crisp motions, making plays, making yards after the catch, Cedric Wilson made a hell of a play, making a yard, you know, kind of making a couple of guys miss and then hitting it up in there. I give the receivers an A as well.
All right, an A for the wide receivers, a pretty strong outing from Glenn Stretch Smith, and a very positive, especially except for the special teams coach, John Bones Fossil, who continues to draw the ire of one Glenn Smith. Okay, Stretch, appreciate it. Enjoy your TV tonight. We'll be watching WFAA with Joe Trahan replacing Del Hanson. Del Hanson finally fired after all these years, and I think it was about time. All right, thank you, Stretch.
All right, man, have a good evening. Thanks.
Okay, see ya. All right, there it was. And Ed, you were wrapping up all your interviews, so I just wanted to let you know, sometimes people say, why didn't we hear Ed asking Stretch? Well, Ed's at the stadium down in the locker room, so we take care of Stretch while Ed's doing all of that. But Stretch, he really wanted, and something I wanted to bring up with you, he was aiming toward giving Bones Fossil an F. But the 56-yard field goal by Zuerlein caused him to give the special teams a C instead, because obviously Zuerlein, after having a rough week last week, delivered in a big way in crunch time. But Ed, let's go back before we do like the – we'll do the whatever McCarthy was doing at the end of the game. But it's first half. Cowboys have played really well. And they have a, I believe at the time, a 14-11 lead. And they're down there around, they've got
to get the ball back with 2 minutes to go.
Correct. And the Chargers are in a 4th and 20. They're at a 4th and 20, and they're going to have to punt the ball away. They're not going for it, not anything. They're going to punt the ball away. And here come the Cowboys with just Katy bar the door. The punt block has been put on, and everybody, three people converge at the punter, and was it to Kamara 54, yeah, who ends up into the punter? You can say, oh, the punt protector, whatever. We found out later, I believe, Ed, in your investigation and as you were talking to McCarthy after the game, that it was the plan was to knock the punt protector into the punter, you know, just kind of like throw. I mean,
pick him up and throw him at the punter.
Yeah, that was the plan. But again, Bones Fossil, 4th and 20, gonna get the ball back. Got some time. Everything's kind of going your way, and you do that. Now, again, they didn't capitalize. By the grace of God, the Cowboys somehow kind of held on there, and they didn't capitalize on that. But still, some baffling kind of stuff, Ed, from the special teams.
Well, they didn't capitalize on it because that was one of the series on which they had a penalty on what had been a touchdown otherwise. And then they tried to kick a field goal to tie the game at the half and hit the upright.
Correct.
So for those reasons, the play didn't cost him points, although you can still argue it cost him a chance at 3 or a chance at 7.
Yes.
Because I like Dak Prescott, you know, on his 20-yard line with 2 minutes to go to get points. It was really a foolish decision. And my reaction was to do the All-American thing and react on Twitter by posting the following: one thing I must do before I retire is find out how Mike McCarthy lets John Fossil talk him into these kinds of things, because it defies responsible behavior. It's just poor, poor situational game decision making.
Yeah, it really is. Ed, be a little careful at your age, you know, even mentioning retirement. You know, some of these companies will take you up on it.
Well, they tried to retire me once before, it seems like.
They were forced to bring you back, and the rest is history. So, Ed, let's go straight to it. I mean, because folks want to talk about it. They win the game, but you still have to talk about what happened leading up to that game-winning field goal. I mean, okay, Ed, you're in the press box, so you're probably not hearing the game broadcast, but everything was going kind of slowly. I get it. The Cowboys certainly didn't want to leave. They wanted to be the last team to have any chance at winning the game. They didn't want to have the Chargers have any chance.
Correct. The perils that come with scoring too early and giving the opponent, you know, the last possession. This time, you know, they wanted the last possession.
Correct.
And they had it. Yes.
And so they're moving it in. Nice throw to Amari. Now, he gets hurt on that play, so there's like a forced timeout there. And so at some point, you know, they've got like 33 seconds left. They still have a timeout. And I mean, it was just such a strange. I don't know what y'all were doing in the press box, but just watching it, you're just like, what are they doing? You run the ball, and I think that was one of those things where it's just like, well, we need to get a run. This would be good to run the ball there. But this coach has a tendency, and maybe we can blame it on Bones Fossil, but they. If he gets anywhere, like Greg the Leg is such a legend, it's like if he gets within 58 yards, it's like they just get incredibly sort of conservative in the way they act. And I think everybody watching this game, and you had to be, I'm sure, from the press box, is thinking, why don't you try to get 10 more yards? Like, what's wrong with making this a 46 or 47 yard game winner? And it just the whole thing got butchered, and this continues to be an issue with this head coach.
Yeah, there's no question. His game management oftentimes has been very poor. I will say that my vantage point wasn't in the press box at that point. We'd actually headed down, so we were in the tunnel watching from field level, so it was a little more difficult to see. I was behind the Cowboys offense. So I believe there was a play where Tony Pollard ran and cut back inside instead of going out of bounds.
Yes, that did happen.
And that was a bad decision by the player. And you can say, well, obviously the player's not been adequately trained for this situation. And we just talked, as I mentioned, with Brandon Staley, the importance of situational football. And yeah, I mean, McCarthy did not handle it well. And Tony Pollard didn't handle it well. And they're fortunate that they won the game, because we just said it was the second longest game-winning kick in Zuerlein's 10-year history. So he doesn't do this every day. This doesn't work every day in the NFL. And so they did create a situation for themselves where they very easily could have done the same thing they did last week, which was lose a winnable game on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Could have ended up
this time. They're fortunate this time that the Zuerlein made up for their mistake and made a very long kick.
You got all that time left, and you got a timeout to bang. I just watch, even like whether it's Aaron Rodgers or some of these other quarterbacks, some of these other teams, you'll see it. Or I've seen it with Tom Brady at the end of games. They trust the quarterback to make a quick decision, and if he has to throw it out of bounds, he just gets the snap and he chunks it out of bounds. If that's what you have to do, you have to do. You have to trust the quarterback there that he's not going to go run around and get sacked or let something horrible happen. And it was just like, what do we do? What do we do, guys? And then they go up to the line and continue to let that time, and then they bang the timeout with like 4 seconds left. It was very strange, and the kicker covered for everybody by what he did.
When you put Mike McCarthy at the end of a game with a bad clock operator, there's no telling.
I wish you had gone up after the game. I don't know if you had to go capture your stuff still in the press box or how you handled that, but I wish you had have made the move up to see if the clock operator was still up there. We needed a pool reporter to talk to that clock operator. God, I love that explanation. It was the clock operator who was screwing that up. Ed, down there trying to see over the defense, had made his way down to field level. What's it look like, by the way, Ed, from down there? Is that place just like compared to AT&T Stadium? Does it have a similar gargantuan kind of over-the-top feel to it? What's the biggest difference in your mind? Now that all those video or the scoreboard and all has a very interesting look to it. Yeah, that looks different to me.
It's probably the only stadium that Jerry stands there and says, this might be nicer than Jerry World. And I'm sure he thinks that while knowing that he played a big role in getting that stadium built with Stan Kroenke out in L.A. But I guess the most unique feature about it is, you know, the field is covered, but it's not enclosed. It's not a dome. They take advantage of the beautiful weather. You know, it's nice and cool, and there's a little breeze blowing, and they just have a canopy over the playing field. So it really is an ideal setting on the kind of day we experience today. And I think it'll be a spectacular Super Bowl venue.
Wait, okay, so I just want to make sure I get this right. The canopy is up there, and I'm sure it's a nice-looking canopy. If it starts raining and everything, what can they do?
Well, I think if it rains straight down, then it will be fine. It would protect the field from that. It could be exposed to the elements somewhat. If it was windy and rainy, it could come in from the side. But I think for the most part, it's designed because and created to take advantage of perfect conditions that generally exist in Southern California, you know, during a football season.
Yeah, they do.
I don't think weather would ever have a big influence on the game unless it was wind related.
Okay. I just happened to see something today that drew my interest. I don't know what it was like when you left tonight or this afternoon. It would have been like 4:30. I don't know. I get mixed up. The game was over at like 4 something local time. So you left the place at like 6 o'clock. I read at game time today the temperatures were going to be in the 60s, which would seem like a very chilly day for Southern California. Did it feel a little nippy to you as you left the stadium?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. I was just wearing a suit coat, and
okay,
I was perfectly comfortable. I thought it was a phenomenally gorgeous day.
I bet you were ready to get out of that suit coat. My gosh, I'm looking at you right now. You got some kind of V-neck thing going. You're showing
a little
more chest hair than I would like to see, but
at least it's not my nose hair. That would be worse.
Let's get that clipped. No, nose looks fine. Nose looks fine. Okay, Ed, just on the last note here, we've hit on a lot of things, and the offense, you noted it. It was like some kind of NFL record, basically. I think you said it was 14. I thought it was 13, but 14 first downs in the first quarter. I mean, that was insane. Boom, boom, boom. They're moving up and down the field. And then they get into this was a quarterback battle that was like an efficiency type battle. They weren't just, although I think Romo called it the turkey hole shot or whatever that Herbert dropped in there. This guy can flat out chunk it. I mean, he is fun to watch. But both these quarterbacks were extremely efficient. And then, Ed, the one thing we haven't really said a lot about, you did mention Pollard may have made the wrong decision, but my goodness, Pollard today gave them a speed and a vision. And I mean, he was the lead back today. I mean, you know, Zeke's still the sledgehammer and he's still the starting running back. I don't want to try to say otherwise, but Pollard got more carries. And I thought for once that maybe the McCarthy, you know, how we've talked about how he's not a guy that's going to like feed, like Garrett would have like to feed Zeke over and over again.
Offensive line and runner and win that way through the quarterback. And so for a lot of reasons, I honestly believe that McCarthy may value Tony Pollard more than he does Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah, and, you know, for example, today, the last time a player not named Zeke Elliott finished with 100 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown on the road, which is what Pollard did today. The last time that happened prior today was Darren McFadden in 2015, week 7 at the Giants, 152 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown. So the last 8 times the Cowboys had a 100-yard rusher with a rushing touchdown on the road, the last 8 times that had happened, it was Ezekiel Elliott. And today it's not Ezekiel Elliott, but the guy he now shares the role with, Tony Pollard.
Yeah, boy, that's fascinating stuff, and it was interesting to watch it unfold. And I thought the O-line, by the way, Ed, we hadn't really mentioned a lot of that. Terrence Steele did a great job out there at right tackle, kind of hung in there. Having Zach Martin back, I mean, he obviously was dominant inside. Tyron Smith played extremely well from being there. You know, there was some thought that Bosa is a great pass rusher, and he's going to make plays at some point, but thought they did a pretty good job against him.
Well, Dak did get sacked a couple times, and he fumbled once.
Zach got that one.
Fackrell came around the left edge on Tyron Smith on a blitz and got past him and hit Dak in the back, and he fumbled. And I think Dak says he and Zach both, you know, recovered the fumble, so he'll share the credit with Zach Martin. But you know, when this crisis happened with Lael Collins getting suspended after week one for 5 games because of failing the substance abuse program, a lot of people again thought, well, the Cowboys should do what they reluctantly did last year and move Zach Martin out to right tackle. And I think the two explanations for their refusal to do that this time were, you know what, Zach Martin's a guard. He wants to play guard. And they think he can better help Terrence Steele at right tackle and importantly, the center, Tyler Biadasz, who is the weak link on this offensive line, is right guard. If he's playing right tackle, he really can't help the center, but he can at right guard. Now, Connor McGovern showed that he can play inside, so you still question, they don't have the 5 best players, my opinion right now, but they made it work. And one of the ways that they made it work with Terrence Steele at right tackle opposite Joey Bosa was quick passing game and relying on the run. They ran at Bosa. I was really watching a lot early on that matchup because it fascinated me when the game began. You know, I did a little research and I felt like the Cowboys were taking a real risk. They were a big, huge mismatch advantage if they went to a throwing game in pass protection, because you have Terrence Steele, who's a $680,000 backup player, against a $27 million pass rusher, Joey Bosa. But they really did an effective job of neutralizing Bosa. And for the most part, I don't think that Steele got a lot of help in terms of, sometimes they lined the tight end up over him to kind of discourage him, but I didn't really see a lot of chipping with the back or any of those sorts of things. So credit to Terrence Steele for stepping up in a very difficult situation.
I thought it was, I think you're absolutely right. I thought he did a good job. And I did think they kind of ran at Bosa, and that was interesting. And in fact, at some key moments late in the game, Bosa was over there on the sideline. Needed to, and it was a little bit winded, perhaps. This is a strange game, Ed, and the fact that there would be some really long drives, offenses because of the turnovers and everything. Sometimes, the different respective offenses were off the field for a long period of time. It was a strange. I mean, I even Dak early in the, in the second half, I kind of thought, my gosh, when is he ever going to get back out there? And it felt like one of those old, Garrett used to talk about, oh, we kind of didn't have enough possessions today. It kind of felt like one of those type games. So it was a little bit interesting in that respect. Ed, the Cowboys are going to host the Eagles on Monday night. As you said, then the Panthers and Giants have a chance to really get rolling. The Eagles, you're there so early. I'm sure you got a chance to see a little bit of that. Looked ugly. Looked really bad for most of that game. As I recall, it was about 17-3 or 14-3 for much of that game. Hurts, who had played so well in that first game, really couldn't get anything going. I think the Cowboys are things set up well with these home games to get on a little bit of a roll here.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were curious to see after the way the Eagles played in their opener, you know, just what kind of confidence and what kind of consistency they could create with Jalen Hurts at quarterback, because they really haven't had that. He hasn't, they have a new head coach in Nick Sirianni, who was a quarterback's coach with the Colts before taking this job. And, the Eagles have now a long history of hiring head coaches who are in that role for the first time. And Sirianni, with 6 months to get ready for their opening day, Obviously had Hurts well prepared for that game, but now they're back in a more normal routine where you've only got, you know, three or four practices to get a guy ready, and Hurts did not play well today. And, you know, again, the 49ers are a good defensive team as well, much like the team that the Cowboys played here today. But I felt like the Cowboys were going to have a chance to run the football against this team because that's what they did when they played the Staley coordinated Rams here week one last year. Zeke was a big influence in that game with a rushing touchdown and a receiving touchdown. And then we saw them have a much more balanced attack in this game today and play the way with the identity I think they would like to play with, because I think they do realize that Dak Prescott throwing 50 times a game is just not sustainable, and it's not going to be effective on a frequent basis in terms of.
I think you're right, and I think the timing is great here, Ed, because there's some wonky stuff going on, but everything has been beautiful to this point. Like those earphones, the headset you have, Ed, it always just look like you're about to do like a recording session, maybe sing something. But
that'll be the end of our audience and all our sponsors.
Ed, I did want to say, though, before we said goodnight, the NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money, winning season makes the big games better and the victories even sweeter. Head to MyBookie.ag and choose from a variety of boosts, contests, and promotions up for grabs highlighted by the crown jewel of winning season, the famed MyBookie Super Contest. And it's only cost $10 to enter. Pick five games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point. Each point gets you closer to the grand prize. If you missed out on week one, don't sweat it because entries are still open. And it all takes just one solid week to get you back in the mix. Don't just take my word for it. Join now and start your winning season with MyBookie today. In order to get you started, make your first deposit at MyBookie.ag and use the promo code Doomsday to instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using the promo code Doomsday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Okay, Ed.
And follow the advice of former Cowboys coach, Hall of Famer Bill Parcells, whose gambling philosophy was this, and he's a noted horse player. His gambling philosophy was never bet a lot to win a little, bet a little to win a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So like the $2 to win like $100 or $200.
Right. Take rather the long than, shots.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I think.
I'm trying to help.
I appreciate you. I think my bookie will appreciate that. I've seen some of our former ESPN colleagues are now connected to casinos in Las Vegas. It's really...
Oh, Kenny Mayne, Trey Wingo. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's taken over. I may be out there. You may see me kind of out there greeting people as they come
new
in.
Opportunity for fired sports writers.
Okay, Ed.
With the gamblers. You know, I got to tell you, while we're on the subject of gambling, when I was not working for 2.5 years, one of the first phone calls I got offering me employment was from a gambling consortium. They wanted me to make calls and find out injury information and any team dynamics that might, you know, affect a game and share that with their clientele. And I felt like that was probably a bad idea if I wanted to get back to covering the NFL, which I did. Also did not want to end up in the trunk of a town car at the Newark airport.
Ed, do you have the number of those folks?
I don't think they take calls. They just make calls.
Uh-oh, Ed, as we record this early in the fourth quarter, the Kansas City Chiefs have taken a 35-30 lead over Baltimore. I'm sure our listeners will like this.
He's not even over yet.
As they listen to this. Yeah, it'll be by the time they're listening. Well, Chris Gross is very fast. Executive producer. And then, of course, Mark Friedo Freeman. Good to see him. He had some friends drop by tonight. We had a little audience. Sill dropped by and her boyfriend Kyle and Ed, so it was nice to have like a studio audience here. You know, I perform better in front of an audience. Okay.
So like a game show host.
That's when I really turn it on. Ed, it's been It's been fun. It's been a fun evening. It's been a long day for you. Are you going to go out now? It's still fairly early. Let's see, 7:45 where you are in Los Angeles. Are you going to go out of the town, or are you just going to get some rest tonight? Stay in.
I will go downstairs, watch the end of this game, and get something to eat in the hotel.
Okay. Enjoy yourself. A Marriott, like a pizza or something. You know, do what Randy used to do. Have about 4 or 5 beers and then kind of chase it with a milkshake. No, he would have 4 or 5 Miller Lights. And he'd be like, make me a milkshake. Very strange. It's a very odd thing to request. All right, Ed, I wish I was there with you, because I feel like you're going to go down there and just be around a bunch of strangers who want your autograph. You and I have always enjoyed our time on the road, except the time you called me and said, I'm over at the Tilted Kilt. I didn't know what that was. Okay, Ed, all my best. We'll cut that last.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, good to talk to you. Appreciate you.
We'll do it after the Eagles game, late night.
Maybe.
See you.
Yeah, okay, good night.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.